Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. And today we're going to talk about one of the greatest legends of rock and roll, and that is Janis Joplin. The title of our podcast is Pearl, The Death of Janis Joplin. We're going to talk about Janis's life, her career, and her tragic death at the age of 27. She was a member of the 27 Club, girl.
She is. There's a bunch of them out there, Timmy.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain was the last one, wasn't he?
Amy Winehouse. Yeah. So we're going to talk about Janis, but before we do, let me introduce my co-host. We don't have a regular panel here today. Brandy had an important event that she had to attend, so today you're going to be with me and the Colonel.
Well, so, it wasn't really important. It's a Friday.
Yeah, well, it is Friday.
The devil tends to schedule meetings on Fridays and then run out of here.
Let's face it, she's at a bar.
Yeah, she's at a bar.
Yeah, I was just trying to, I was trying to sugarcoat it. But yeah, she's at a bar someplace. But that's okay. We can do this, Colonel. I would like to introduce the most dangerous man in podcasting today, the moral compass of our podcast, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
I'm good today, Timmy. It's a Friday. It's January, 21st?
Pretty 20th. It's pretty nice day. It's Inauguration Day.
Inauguration Day, and it's 60 degrees here, Timmy.
Yeah,
I was in Cincinnati, Atlanta. That's very strange.
Oh, it's very good. I was in Atlanta last weekend, and it was 70. It was nice, man.
Yeah.
So I'm in favor of global warming, Colonel. I like this. I'm not going to live long enough to see the really bad effects of global warming. So, for me, it's perfect.
Yeah, that's true. That's what I always tell my kids. Yeah. I don't give a rat's ass about global warming. I'm going to be dead.
Right.
That means I decompose faster. What do I care?
But, we won't have harsh winters in the remaining years.
I was listening to, speaking of Inauguration Day, Timmy, listening to NPR and found out an interesting historical tidbit today.
What's that, Colonel?
There have been two presidents that have been sworn in four times.
Okay.
Do you know who they are?
Two presidents have been sworn in four times.
Four times.
One would be Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt. And that's a good question. I don't know. Who's the other one?
Obama.
How did he get sworn in four times?
Obama, the first time he got sworn in, justice messed it up, if you recall.
Right. Yeah, I remember that. They left out a word. And they didn't want the conspiracy-minded to be all freaked out.
So they went back and they redid it the next day. Well, the second time Obama was elected, Inauguration Day fell on a Sunday.
Okay.
So he was sworn in private on a Sunday.
Okay.
And then Monday, they did the inauguration, the public inauguration, where he was re-sworn in.
So he's been sworn in four times, and Franklin Roosevelt, of course.
Yeah, so if you want to stump your friends at the bar, just ask them that question.
That's a good trivia question.
Yeah.
Okay, Colonel, I know that you're a music lover, and you know a lot about music, so this is a good topic for you.
She's an interesting person. She was an amazingly talented woman, but just like everybody else, not everybody else, like a lot of people had those demons that she had to deal with.
Yeah, and unfortunately,
she didn't deal with them well.
She didn't deal with them well, and it claimed her life. So we'll talk about that. Before we do that, let me give a special thank you to the folks who support us on Patreon. You know, we are able to stay on the air because of your generous donations. If you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs. You can give a little, you can give a lot, or Colonel.
Or just a wee little tiny bit, Timmy.
Everything helps. And we would like to say thank you to those of you who so generously support the podcast. And that includes Alicia and Chip, Cindy Liu, Bridget Clavey, Jim Moyer, Jason Dykes, the History Goes Bump podcast with Diane Student. Thank you very much, Diane. Brandy McBride, Amber Trevino, Annette Petre, and Obsessively Calm. She's got a lot of great products. Check those out.
I'm still using my body butter, Timmy.
Oh, that's good to hear.
I got my body butter on right now.
Okay, I don't want to know anymore. Lise over in Norway. Leslie Hager. Thank you very much, Leslie. Amber Scoville. Jahar, of course, over there in Europe. Andrew Happ. Mandy Swanson. Of course, Jennifer Siemens and her mother, Linda, as well as Jennifer's son, Hunter. Thank you all very much for your support. Heather Poole, the members of the Insight podcast, Allie and Charlie. Thank you, ladies, very much. One of my favorite podcasts, next to ours, of course. Well, I don't know. It's probably
my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably about that. But anyway, check out Insight if you haven't already. Joe Hopkins, thank you, Joe, for your generous donation. Joe's a great guy. Joe is in New York City. And, of course, Colonel, we get a generous donation each month from Rudy the Wonder Dog.
Rudy makes a sacrifice, Timmy.
He does.
Rudy's out hustling.
He's supporting the arts.
Yeah, supporting the arts.
And he's very generous with his money. It could go to wine, women, and or song.
Yep.
But instead, he gives it to the arts to support our podcast. So thank you, Rudy. And thank you, everyone, who are supporting us on through Patreon. If you would like to learn more how you can support the podcast, go to patreon.com/historydweebs. And we appreciate your support. Okay, Colonel, ready to jump in this story?
I'm ready to jump on Janice, Timmy.
Okay. Okay. I won't make any comment.
A lot of people jumped on Janice.
Yeah, she was. She had a very active social life when she was older.
She's a bit of a harlot, Timmy.
Of course, Janice Joplin developed a love for music at an early age, but her career didn't take off until she joined a group called the Big Brother and the Holding Company back in 1966. Their 1968 album, Cheap Thrills, it sounds like My Weekend, was a huge hit. However, there was some friction between Janice and the band, and they parted ways soon after. And she went into a solo career for a while, and eventually would release one of the most highly acclaimed albums ever in rock and roll history, and that was Pearl back in 1971. She left a mark on rock and roll, and so we're going to talk about her life and her legacy, as well as, I said, her tragic death at the age of 27. So Janis Joplin was born on January 19th, 1943, in Port Arthur, Texas. You ever been to Port Arthur, Texas, Colonel?
I haven't. I've been to San Antonio, Texas. And that's pretty much the only place in Texas I've been to.
I have actually been outside of Port Arthur. I went on a cruise once, and it went out of Galveston.
Mm-hmm.
And Port Arthur is real close to Galveston. It's just a lot of oil fields, and it's close. You know, if you take a cruise out of Galveston, you go past all the oil rigs and stuff. So, I mean, it's a really industrialized town, and, you know, so she grew up kind of in this. Really, it's a skyline just dominated by oil tankers and refineries and stuff. But anyway, it's a small town in Texas that's connected to the oil industry. Very conservative, or at least it was when she was growing up. So Janice was born on January 19th, 1943, in Port Arthur, as I said. While growing up in Port Arthur, Texas, Janice developed a love for music at a very young age. She showed promise as a performer while singing in the church choir. And I mean, if you just ever, I mean, I'm sure most of our listeners have heard Janis Joplin, and she's just a natural talent. I mean, her voice is just, even today, you know, looking back on it 40 years later, just an incredible voice. Janis sang in her church choir as a child, showed promise. She was an only child until she was 6 years old when her sister Laura was born. And then 4 years later, her brother Michael arrived. Janice was early on was a fairly good student, and surprisingly, early on was fairly popular in school. However, as she grew older and she went through puberty, she started to develop acne and gain some weight. And, as you know, for a young girl that age, that can be a very difficult thing to experience. And other kids would, you know, make fun of her. And that it would really impact her the rest of her life and impact her confidence more than anything. As I said, she grew up in this in Port Arthur, a small town known for its connection to the oil industry. And she grew up just really wanting to get out of that town. She had a good relationship with her parents. They encouraged her. Her father encouraged her to read. Her mother encouraged her with her music. But she just did not have a good time growing up. You know, she was the odd, weird kid at school that other students picked on. During her teen years, she developed a host of crippling insecurities, fueled by her pudgy body, acne skin, and her hair. She just was kind of the oddball.
And that you find with, to me, the greatest musicians and artists, I think, they don't fit in.
They typically
have to
don't.
Find there. And as you know, I love Bruce Springsteen. Mm-hmm. He said the same thing. He was just an outcast. He was not pretty much invisible.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And same way with comedians. A lot of comedians go through that where they're just either very shy or they haven't got, like you said, a lot of demons. And they are able to they're able to harness that in a way, in some cases, you do through their comedy or through their music or whatever. And that was the case with Janice. When she was at, she attended Thomas Jefferson High School in Port Arthur. As a teenager, she started to rebel. Remember, this was late 1950s, early 60s. She would not dress like the other girls in this conservative community in the late 1950s.
Just when you had the bobby socks and
the pooter skirts. Instead, she wore men's shirts and tights and short skirts. So she was starting to stand out in the crowd, and she became target of teasing, as well as being popular, as well as being a popular subject to all the rumors that goes around with high school. As a result of her unpopularity with her fellow classmates, she chose a path of hard swearing and beer drinking. Colonel, I can relate to that.
Well, I know Speaking of hard swearing and beer drinking, the devil's doing that right now.
Yeah, that's why we're doing this podcast.
Why we're doing this by ourselves.
And look, she did all right. She grew up to have a, you know,
I don't know that
a moderately successful podcast.
I don't know if she did all right.
I mean, she's not Janis Joplin by any stretch. But
she's not in jail, so right. I guess for her that's all right.
Yeah. But she started hanging out with older boys. And kids were mean to her. I mean, they would call her names like pig, and like I said, they because she hung out with mostly guys, they started rumors that she was very sexually active, which she was, or at least she would become later on.
She's kind of a floozy.
And she was. I mean, we don't get too much into her relationships. She was engaged once, but she was bisexual. She experimented with, you know, with both genders. But she in high school she eventually developed a group of guy friends who shared her interest in music, and this was, you know, this was like pre hippie days. This was what they call the beatnik days, the mm-hmm. beat generation, which she became part of that culture, that beatnik culture. Musically, Janis Joplin and her friends gravitated toward blues and jazz, admiring blues artists such as Lead Belly. You're a big fan of Lead Belly.
Love me some Lead Belly.
I love Lead Belly too. B.B. King and
we're going to have to do a podcast of Colonel Sings the Blues one day, Timmy.
All right, we'll do that. We won't release it, but we'll do the podcast. Yeah. That might be one of our Facebook Lives that we do. We just
Oh, my baby.
Damn right. You got the blues.
Damn right I got the blues. Oh, my baby. Oh, my baby, don't love me.
Okay, so she also followed blues. She was inspired by legendary blues artists and vocalists Bessie Smith, Ma Rainey, and Odetta. And the group, she would frequent local working class bars in Texas and Louisiana. By her senior year of high school, Janis had developed a reputation. Now, who does this sound like? She developed a reputation as a ballsy, tough-talking woman who liked to drink and be outrageous. That could be Brandy's introduction.
Does it say penis loving on there?
Well, she's penis loving. I think penis she was vagina loving.
And she was bisexual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a softball. I don't know if she ever played softball, but in spirit, she probably. So, yeah, tough talking, a ballsy.
We're going to have to see if ballsy, the devil can sing. She might be able to belt them out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Brandy, we should keep this podcast for Brandy because, you know, she's known for being ballsy and tough talking. Likes to drink, fight. Pill popping, penis loving.
Satan's dirty little secret.
After graduating from high school, Janis enrolled into Lamar State College of Technology in the nearby town of Beaumont, Texas. There, she devoted more time to hanging out and drinking with friends than she did to studying. So, you know, she's a typical college student.
I believe Don Henley's from Beaumont, Texas.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, even though she was extremely shy and reserved about singing in public, she would, as I said, in high school, she did sing in the choir, church choir. Following graduation and enrolling in Lamar in Beaumont, she studied art, and painting was actually her first real love. As I mentioned, she didn't do a lot academically. She didn't do well, and her friends would spend a lot of time drinking and going to the bars in Texas and over in Louisiana to hear the blues. So she also listened. So at the end of her first semester at Lamar, she left school and she went on then to attend Port Arthur College, where she took some secretarial courses. Yeah, I can't see Janis Joplin being a secretary.
Yeah, she don't look the part to me.
Yeah. But she got bored, as I said, she always kind of wanted to get out of Port Arthur. So in the summer of 1961, she headed out to Los Angeles. First she went to Houston, and she went out to Los Angeles to explore the music scene. But kind of ran out of funds, and nothing was really happening out there on her first trip. So she moved back to Texas in 1962. But she settled, instead of in Port Arthur, she settled this time in Austin, which, of course, you know, Colonel is a music mecca. Of the Southwest, right?
They got South by Southwest. My boys played down there
tonight. Yeah, and Austin's known for its music scene, and Janice fit right in. It's also the home of the University of Texas. So Janice enrolled at the University of Texas, where she studied art, and she would occasionally perform at places like Threadgill's, which is now a popular chain of restaurants down there. Although she didn't finish her studies at the University of Texas, while she was there, she lived in a building commonly referred to as the ghetto. There's a neighborhood at the University of Dayton that's called the ghetto.
And you know, I was wrong, Timmy. Don Henley's from Linden, Texas. Edgar Winner
is from. Remember? Oh yeah, from great Baltimore, blues guitars. Yeah. So when she lived in this building called Together, it was supposedly an abandoned World War II wooden army barracks that really all the student outcasts would eventually find themselves. Rent there was $40 a month, so that's about all she could afford. But she was never accepted into any of the fraternities. You know, she was too outrageous. She was dressing, you know, she was an art student.
She was a hippie before her time.
She was, dude. I taught part-time. I taught academic classes at an art school, a local art school here, once. And the students are they just really struggled with academics. I mean, I taught, like, English, and that's funny, me teaching English. But I taught English, I taught history, I taught, you know, psych. They had to have so many core courses, right, besides their art courses. And I taught a marketing class, and this girl did, I said, take any product you want, and develop a marketing plan for it. That was their assignment. So she came back with a marketing plan to sell ecstasy. it was really good. It was really creative and stuff. But so I love these students, even though they were, you know, they were just challenged academically. You couldn't, I mean, their papers were horrendous, and you couldn't read. But when they had a... they would have an event every year where they would show off their artwork. Mm-hmm. And they were different. You know, some of them was painting, some of it was photography or whatever. And these students who could barely, you know, write a complete sentence in a composition course were like one of the most amazing artists you would ever see. And it's just so incredible, you know. So, you know, it taught me a lesson that, you know, you can't really, people have different talents. And where I thought these students were really going to struggle in life because of their limited academic skills, the work they did with art and photography and painting or graphic design, I mean, it was just amazing.
Well, you know, it's funny because I got one of my boys, Logan. Now, Logan's always been a very bright kid.
Mm-hmm.
And he could do well in school. Every time he tested him, Logan was always testing in that 90th percentile, 89, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The problem was his brothers were always testing in the 99th percentile. So.
Right, so he was being compared to, right.
Yeah, but Logan had no interest in school.
Mm-hmm.
He had no interest in school, and Logan does what he wants to do. So through high school, Logan, you know, he would struggle because he just, if Logan didn't want to do something, he didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's in college, and he's a graphic design major.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy's amazing. And they had their first show, and Logan's stuff was always graphic design. It was always material things, mm-hmm. you know, the things that you would build or things right. And photography, you know that. You've seen his photography. Sure. And
his photography is beautiful.
But he started drawing. Mm-hmm. He'd never drawn before.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the show, and he showed me his drawings. and I could not believe how this kid could draw.
Yeah.
He's 19 years old. You know, he's been at our house the whole time, never picked up a pencil to draw anything. Uh-huh. So it's funny where you find these.
Yeah, you know, people just have to find their
people who are artistically inclined tend to not.
I worked for a lady, an administrator, 20 years, and then she retired, and she was bored out of her mind because she'd work 80 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't know what she was going to do. It was one of the things where it was kind of a forced retirement type of deal. And she just took up art. And now she has her own studio. I mean, she's selling art. She's teaching art. It's just, I mean, and she didn't start drawing until she was like 55.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Logan has sold photographs and
so maybe we like have that. Maybe we have talent that we haven't tapped into, Chris.
I have no artistic talent whatsoever.
Dude, I took 4 years of art in high school, and I can't draw a stick person.
I got my singing.
That goes without saying, Colonel.
But I can't play an instrument. All the boys can play an instrument.
But you're a hell of a podcaster.
I'm a good podcaster. I'd like to think I'm one of the...
Now, Johnny Frustool might have a different opinion.
Don't get me started on Johnny Footstool. Well, we're trying to keep this from getting an E. But I'm still looking for your ass, Johnny Footstool. I'll find you one day. And I got like 15 people that left us reviews. And I don't mind getting the bad reviews.
We've got some very good reviews lately.
We have. But you know what I do not like?
What?
When the dumb sumbitches spell words wrong when they write our reviews. if you're going to criticize us.
If it's a bad review, right?
Yeah, if it's a bad review, at least say.
At least,
don't spell awful with an E. It was awful. If it was awful, made you full of awe, then we should get 5 stars, you dumb son of a bitch. But when you put. Let me get back to the story.
Thank you.
My blood pressure all worked up here tonight.
I'm sorry, Colonel. We don't want that. So anyway, so about this time in Austin, Janet began, where she's in Austin now, University of Texas, right, living in the ghetto. She began performing at what we call folk sings. And this is like time of the folk music, you know, and the coffee shops and all that, coffee houses. They were casual musical gatherings where anyone could on campus could perform, and that's what she did. She started performing and getting her confidence up. And you know, if you've ever heard her, you know she has a very forceful, gutsy singing style, and it just won over the audience. They were amazed. She was like unlike any other white female vocalist at the time. Including folks like Joan Baez and Judy Collins, because they were known for their gentle sound.
Joan Baez just has a beautiful voice.
Yeah, yeah.
But I believe Joan Baez was classically trained. They had Janis Joplin did not have what would be considered a classically good voice.
Right, but she had. You could hear. I mean, it was almost. It wasn't, as you said. She wasn't classically trained. It was almost instinctual, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like a passion.
It was very primal, almost.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good word for it. Primal. She would. Janis would in Austin meet up with Chet Helms, who took her back to Northern California. Or North Beach, California, which in 1963 was considered the Greenwich Village of the West Coast. So she went back to California a second time, and she would sing in bars and coffee houses. So she's starting, you know, kind of to get come out of her shell a little bit, starting to get some gigs. Not very successful, you know, not knocking down any doors or anything like that. But, you know, she's starting to make a name for herself. And she actually had a side stage performance in the 1963 Monterey Folk Festival, which later on became the place where she really emerged as a star. But in 1963, she played at the Monterey Folk Festival on a small stage. But her career at that point still wasn't getting you know, gaining much traction. She then went to New York City for a while, where she was hoping to have better luck getting her career off the ground. But by this point, she was drinking and using drugs a lot. She would she began to regularly use speed or amphetamines and other drugs. And, of course, this interfered with her musical aspirations. By 1964, she's 19 at this time, her musical career was stalling. She was out of school. She was full tilt into the drug culture. And she started shooting up heroin and drinking 80-proof liquor. So she's, you know, started very, you know, getting into the hard stuff very early age.
No good comes from 80.
No, not when you start. It started any time, but you start doing that at 19.
Yeah.
It's going to have an effect on your body. And she wasn't good at handling rejection. Again, coming, you know, from her childhood and what she experienced as a kid growing up, where all the, you know, all her classmates were making fun of her. And, you know, in a career in music or any career in the arts, you kind of have to have tough skin because you're going to be rejected a lot. It's kind of like me and women, you know, you kind of...
It's a numbers game, Timmy.
It's a numbers game, you know. I just let it roll, you know. If I'm successful 10% of the time... You know,
And I've often said to me, the greatest gift in my life that I have, I have absolutely no fear of rejection.
Yeah, me neither. When it comes to women,
I do not care. And there was, with Janis Joplin, you know, the thing that you have to, you know, kind of point out was there was a smoldery sexiness to the woman, but she was not physically an attractive woman.
No, it's weird at times.
At times she could appear to be, but yeah. For the most part she was not.
She was plain. She was
very plain. Yeah. She tried to dress herself up.
But when she was on stage, I mean, when she was on stage,
her persona on stage
was sexy as she used to say. You know, and she lived a pretty lonely life, a pretty sad life. But she used to, I mean, one of her most famous quotes was that every night, she'd say, every night I make love, talking about being on stage, I make love to 25,000 people, but I go home alone. Mm-hmm. And really, when she was on stage, it was very sexual, very sensual. She was given everything that she had on stage. She didn't, you know, she didn't leave anything out on the field when she was on stage. And you can even see that going back and looking at her tapes and stuff, videos of her now, looking back on it. She was an incredible performer. But anyway, this is in late 1964. Her career's not going anywhere. So she decides to move back to Port Arthur, Texas, hoping to kick her drug habit and kind of rehabilitate herself and try to live a normal life. She took a break from music and partying. She started dressing conservatively, wearing long dresses, and even wearing a beehive hairdo. You can't imagine Janis Joplin wearing a beehive. But she was trying to be straight-laced. She was trying to play it straight up. It was this time, right before she moved back to Port Arthur, she met a young man named Peter LeBlanc. And he worked for IBM. He had a successful career in IBM. They had a relationship. And he asked her to marry him. And he actually flew down to Port Arthur or whatever the closest airport was. He visited her parents. He dressed up in a suit. And he went to visit her parents, and he asked her father for her hand in marriage. So father said yes, and, you know, it looked like she was going to live a pretty traditional life. Janis and her mother began planning the wedding. But shortly after, Peter LeBlanc terminated plans to get married. So
that's some bitch.
Yeah, and you know, in her personal life, she never really had long-lasting relationships. As we said, she had a couple. This was one of them. It's the only time that I know of she was engaged. And again, she's only 27 when she died, so she didn't. It wasn't like she, wasn't like she was an old maid. But still, she had, she didn't really have strong personal romantic relationships anyway. And then we said she experimented with lesbianism during her life, which was at the time was not the normal, right? It was during the 50s and 60s.
No, it was not nearly as accepted. I mean, they had
it wasn't accepted. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't accepted by
society.
Even
when you got into the 70s with the free love, that was not, that right. acceptable as common as it is today.
Right, exactly. So anyway, she tries to live this straight-laced life, but, it just wasn't. She was trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. It just wasn't going to work. And she still wanted, she still had this desire to pursue her musical dreams. So she returned to performing. In May of 1966, she was recruited by a friend named Travis Rivers to audition for a new psychedelic rock band based in San Francisco called Big Brother and the Holding Company. At the time, the group was managed by another longtime friend of Janice's, Chet Helms. Remember, she went out with Chet mm-hmm. Helms out to L.A. the second time she went out to California. Big Brother and Holding Company's members included James Gurley, David Getz, Peter Albin, and Sam Andrew. They were part of the emerging San Francisco music scene in the late 1960s. Among other bands involved in this scene was, of course, the Grateful Dead, Jefferson Airplane. It seems like we're on the streak with podcasts where we're talking about this era in the 60s mm-hmm. in San Francisco. We had the
Altamont.
We had Altamont, and then we had
the Manson Murders.
Yeah. And as I mentioned, when I last time I was out in San Francisco, I went to Haight-Ashbury, and it's a really cool area. And that, of course, that was the famous, area where hippies and musicians and the whole beatnik culture was, really striving back in the late 60s. 67, of course, was the Summer of Love. And anyway, I saw the apartment where Janis Joplin lived. And as I said, a guy I know out there owns a store, and he sells memorabilia, and he owns a phone book from the late 60s that had Janis Joplin's name and
that'd be pretty
listed. Yeah, it was listed, and it was kind of cool. Anyway, so Janis goes out in 1966 to audition for Big Brother and a holding company, and she just blows away, she just blows them away during her audition. And she's quickly offered membership in the group as a lead female vocalist. And in the early days, though, of the band, she just sang a few songs and played tambourine in the background. But it wasn't long before she assumed a bigger role, because it was clear that she was the talent of that band. And Big Brother and Holding Company developed quite a following in the Bay Area. In August of 1967, that was marked the beginning of something really big for Janis and the band. Remember I said that she had played at the Monterey Folk Festival mm-hmm. back in 63.
Right.
But 1967, her and Big Brother and the Holding Company would play at the Monterey Pop Festival. And she just blew away everyone in attendance, dressed, and you can check this out on YouTube, it's still out there, but she was dressed in this velvety outfit, covered head to toes with pearl necklaces. She did a sex-charged rendition of Love Is Like a Ball and Chain, Colonel, and I know you can relate to that.
It is like a ball and chain, Timmy.
And it's really considered, this is really considered where she really made her breakthrough, and the Janis Joplin legend was born at this concert. 3 months later, she had the same effect at the Monterey Jazz Festival. So she's, at this point, really starting to take off. Her career is starting to take off. With these performances, after these two performances, they went from making $1,500 a gig to $10,000 a gig for their performances.
$1,500 was a lot of money.
That was a lot of money back then. Yeah, I mean, it's not bad money today for a band to do a gig for $1,500. and free beer. But I mean, to do in the late 1960s, mid 1960s, earning $10,000 a performance, you know, you're really taking off. The band, though, she had conflicts with the band. But they got a large recording contract with CBS Records, Columbia Records, and they released their first album, Cheap Thrills. Everyone loves Cheap Thrills, Colonel.
Oh, yeah. The cheaper, the better.
Yeah.
And the thrillier, the better.
Yeah. Yeah, I go for cheap. But anyway, that record sold millions of copies. And so now she's really taken off. The band and her really taken off. But really, she was seen, you know, she was the star, right? She was the lead singer, and she was the star. So that, you know, how that works. There's always some friction there when that happens. Like George Michael and Wham, Colonel.
Yeah. Although George Michael, you know, interesting facts about that. He wrote that, what song was it? He wrote Do They Know It's Christmas, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
There was another song that who was the guy, Peter Ridgely or Andrew Ridgely.
Mm-hmm.
After George Michael, they broke up. George Michael wrote a song, and I can't think of what the hell it was. It was his first big hit.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave Ridgely a writing credit on it, even though Michael had written it when he was 17 years old. Just because he wanted to make sure he got some of the money from it.
Okay. And probably setting for life, or probably still getting royalties.
He was he just died, but he was a very generous man.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, but as often occurs with bands, if one member is getting attention, it creates friction with the other members. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when you and I get the attention
and Brandy gets left out, yeah, and she gets nasty. That's why I think that, and listeners, you need to give Brandy just not a lot of love, because, you know, she doesn't deserve that. But
right.
Give her a little bit of love now and again, even though she, you know, she lacks the charm and the finesse and really the sophistication that we do.
Oh, of course.
But, you know, be nice to the woman, because I think that's what makes it mean so often to me.
Yeah, she's you can tell she has a lot of anger issues.
Well, she's really the Tito Jackson of the group.
She really is. You know, doesn't contribute a whole lot.
Not a lot, no.
Yeah, she's long for the ride.
Can't even play an instrument.
Yeah. But we love her.
Yeah, kinda. We do, but I mean, she's, you know, she can't even play a damn tambourine.
So Cheap Thrills sold millions of copies, but Janis was still not satisfied with her career.
Timmy, you know what she is?
What?
Me and you are the Hall, and she's the Oats.
I don't know what that. I don't know how I feel about that, but okay.
I always wonder what that guy did. What the hell does he do?
He's just a friend of
Daryl Hall. He gets half the credit for everything, and he's just playing the guitar half-assed. He ain't even a good guitarist.
So anyway, their appearance at the, as we talked about before, the Monterey Pop Festival, and their version of Ball and Chain, that became so famous, and that led to, you know, them getting a lot of opportunities, including this record contract. But it's still... Janis was not, you know, wasn't doing what she really wanted to do, because, and again, she was getting flack from her bandmates, because most of the praise was focused on Janis' vocals, right? Now, she continued to drink and drug during this time, fueled by heroin, amphetamines, and bourbon. She drank straight from the bottles during gigs. She had this unrestrained sexual raw style that would just mesmerize all audiences. And that attention that she got, as I said, created tension between Janis and her bandmates. You know, it's like when Brandy, you know, starts talking about her boobs. Doesn't that piss you off when she just talks about her boobs?
Because we don't have them, and she knows that's her ace in the hole. Yeah, that she's got boobs.
Yeah, my boobs.
I've had a baby.
You've been in a strip club, and there's a stripper who just won't dance or anything. Just comes out and says, "Here's my boobs. Give me a dollar."
And you know, sometimes the poops is worth them. Not even that. Sometimes it's just the art. We were talking about art before. Yeah. Sometimes the boobs is just works of art.
All right. So, so she's dissatisfied with the band right now. She's doing a lot of drugs. The Albert Grossman, who had already managed Bob Dylan, the band, and Peter, Paul, and Mary, was later signed as the band's manager. And he was able to get them out of another record deal that they had with the mainstream records. So she's trying to get out. You know, she's trying to get out to go on her own. Mm-hmm. The album, their second album, was wildly successful as well and included hits Piece of My Heart, which is one of my favorites, and Summertime. It had been a very challenging process to create the record because of the problems between Janis and the band members. But she, you know, her time with the Big Brother and Holding Company definitely solidified her reputation of having a unique, dynamic, and bluesy style. But again, she was frustrated and she decides that she's going to go out and have a solo career.
Now, she really struggled with a decision to leave Big Brother. And because the band had been, you know, they'd become like a family. Mm-hmm. But she decided to part ways, and she played her last gig in December 1968. And then she had...
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Historic performance at Woodstock in August 1969. That's when she released her first solo album, Got Them Old Cosmic Blues Again, Mama.
Great September, album, by the way.
With the Cosmic Blues Band. Mm-hmm. Now, some of the project's most memorable songs were Try Just a Little Bit Harder and a cover of the Bee Gees tune,
To Love Somebody, To Love Somebody, The Way I Love You.
Now, Colonel, I like your cover, Colonel, but I think Janis's probably was a little bit better.
Hers was a little different.
Yeah,
we had different
interpretations. You bring different interpretations. Same sexual, animalistic,
Same raw sexuality?
Yeah. Raw is the word.
Now, the Cosmic Blues Band received mixed reviews. I just had to sing a Bee Gees song if they're going to come up. They received mixed reviews with some media outlets criticizing
her. Every time you sing a Bee Gees song, a Bee Gee dies.
Somebody, or an angel dies.
And they're down to one Bee Gee. So.
Yeah, I got to watch it.
Yeah.
Now, feeling uniquely pressured to prove herself as a female solo artist in a male-dominated industry, the criticism caused distress for Joplin. And she said, that was a pretty heavy time for me. It was really important, you know, whether people were going to accept me or not. Now, outside of music, Joplin appeared to be struggling with alcohol and drugs, including an addiction to heroin. Her next album will be her most successful, and I believe that's one that had me and Bobby McGee on it, but tragically also her last.
Yeah, and probably her most famous album.
Yeah. And that was
Pearl.
Pearl. Mm-hmm. And interesting story. Now, you know, she dated Kris Kristofferson.
Right.
And Kris Kristofferson was a little hesitant to let her record
Me and Bobby McGee.
Me and Bobby McGee.
Because right. He wrote Me and Bobby McGee.
He wrote it, and he knew that if she said, he said this before, mm-hmm. I've heard him say it. He knew that if she sang the song, mm-hmm. his version will forever be forgotten.
Mm-hmm. That's and he was said. Right.
And he was right.
And how many people has recorded that song, too? I mean, yeah. You know, but never, I mean, you always think of the Janis.
Yeah, you always think of the Janis. And his version's very good.
Yeah.
His is a little, but he really didn't, but he said it, there was this thing in the back of his mind that he knew mm-hmm. if she recorded that song,
yeah.
his would never, ever
yeah.
be compared to it, yeah. and his would be completely forgotten.
Another right.
interesting,
he right.
huh?
He was right.
Another interesting thing she did, according to rumor, is at a party in Hollywood one time, she hit Jim Morrison in the head with a whiskey bottle.
Oh,
knocked
yeah.
him out. He said something up to her and was coming on to her, and she didn't like it, and he hit her in the head with a whiskey bottle. But Kris Kristofferson dated her. They were uh-huh. kind of a pair, and he talked a lot about her, and he said that he knew she was a star that was going to burn out very quickly, that she was not meant long for this world. And he'd seen guys, this is a guy who'd seen guys like Johnny Cash
mm-hmm.
and himself, you know, they were big drug users.
Sure.
And,
Waylon Jennings.
Yeah. And he said he'd never seen anything like Janis.
Wasn't he like decorated in the army? Kris Kristofferson.
Kris Kristofferson was an interesting guy. He was given an appointment to West
yeah,
Point
I
to
remember,
teach.
Yeah. I remember something. That
and
he was,
left. To go write songs in in Nashville. So, you know, he was writing songs for people before he
yeah.
ever recorded.
But I thought he had a pretty distinguished
Yeah, he had a very distinguished
military
career.
Yeah.
He got a West Point appointment to teach. And when he got there,
yeah, he was
a
captain in the U.S. Army.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he decided, you know what, that's not what I want to do. He was also a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I knew he was very, he went to Oxford. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He was a captain in the U.S. Military, U.S. Army.
And for my money, he's one of the top five American songwriters.
And I was going to say, just think of all the songs that he has written over, you know, his
yeah.
life. He's an incredible performer.
But they were an item for off
and probably his most famous song was Me and Bobby McGee.
Bobby McGee.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, she recorded that and made it huge. Now, her insecurity started. Now she's really famous now, and now she's getting really insecure.
Mm-hmm.
And so she turns to drugs and alcohol. And her demons of choice, Timmy, much like the devil, Southern Comfort. Now, the devil doesn't do heroin, but hers were Southern
Comfort. She keeps a bottle of Southern Comfort in her purse.
And just tell me if this describes anybody you might have gone out with, Timmy.
God, okay.
As if that weren't enough.
Or everyone I've gone out yeah. with.
Now, remember, Janis would often accompany those delicacies with a dessert cocktail of amphetamines and barbiturates. And let's not forget another old friend to which Janis just could not say no, sex, from which she would eventually contract gonorrhea. So by 26, you got a drug addicted, alcoholic, gonorrheic woman.
Who, she's doing heroin too.
Doing heroin, who's probably going to show up on your match.com, Timmy.
I'm swiping
like
left on Tinder.
If she got daddy issues, she is the perfect woman for you,
man.
Timmy. You can get rid of the gonorrhea real quickly. You don't want to mess with that one, but.
Yeah.
Now she would.
But man, it'd be nice to hear her sing.
But she'd eventually turn to methadone to try to get off heroin, and she was in and out of rehab.
Yeah, heroin is the tough one to overcome, man.
But she was loved by millions of people. But Janis needed to win over. There was still a bunch of people she needed to win over.
Yeah, it was the people she grew up with.
The people she grew up with. And
she never really got over that, how bad they treated her in school.
No, and I don't know that you ever do. I don't think you know, once you're in high school and you're a misfit and an outcast, I think you have to, you know, I don't know. I was just a normal kid in high school, but she talked about it on the Dick Cavett Show, and we have a short clip of that.
Yeah, let's play that. This is Janis Joplin on the Dick Cavett Show. She's being interviewed and talking about she's going to talk about going back home to Port Arthur after being away, after finding success and being away, and she's going to talk about going back to her 10th annual high school reunion. Let's give it a listen.
Did you ever get back to Port Arthur, Texas?
No, but I'm going back next in August, man. I guess what I'm doing.
I don't know. Neck
I'm going to my 10th annual high school reunion.
I want to take movies and bring them back.
Hey, would you like to go, man?
Well, I don't remember. I don't have that many friends in your high school class.
I don't either.
Or mine, for that
matter. I don't either, believe me.
You don't either? Weren't you kind of a weren't you kind of a business administration major or something in high school? No, it's something in your past. You were...
I worked.
Yeah.
Once.
Had something to do with IBM cards.
Once I did that, yeah, I worked IBM cards. Mm-hmm. But in school, I majored in art. I was a painter at the time.
Yeah. And do you think you'll have a lot to say to your old high school classmates?
I'm going to laugh a lot, man.
Were you not... surrounded by friends in high school?
They laughed me out of class, out of town, and out of the state. Mm. So I'm going home.
Yeah, so that's Janis talking about going home. I love that quote.
And that was actually a little awkward because Dick Cavett didn't, you know, you could see that he...
Yeah, he didn't want to bring up... You could tell he didn't want.
He didn't
to go
know what
there.
He was. He didn't know what how that was going to take that turn.
Yeah, and you could tell he was afraid to ask that question because he didn't want to bring up all those bad memories because he didn't know.
Right. And, yeah. So he's like, and he looked. You know, he felt bad for her.
Yeah.
He just.
But I love it when she says, "Yeah, they laughed me out. They laughed me out of class. They laughed me out of town. They laughed me out of state. Now I'm going home.
Laugh." Now, she attended a high school reunion accompanied by fellow musician and friend Bob Neuwirth, road manager John Cook, and her sister Laura. But it was reportedly an unhappy experience for her. She held a press conference in Port Arthur during her reunion visit. Rolling Stone journalist Chet Filippo reported that she wore enough jewelry for a Babylonian whore.
Yeah.
Who's that come to mind to me?
Well, I think she's trying to make a statement there.
She was. Mm-hmm. Now, when she asked by a reporter if she ever entertained at a high school, she stated, "Only when I walked down the halls."
Yeah. Now, so it didn't turn out to be a great reunion as she had hoped, but she made her point, I think.
Now, by the time the 70s rolled around, Timmy, she was suffering from drug abuse, gonorrhea, still, that she had not gotten taken care of, and alcoholism.
Yeah, she's not 27 years old at this point.
Yeah, and that advanced gonorrhea has got to be a little difficult on you. You would have thought by then.
Well, the thing is, I'm sure it's very hard on you, but she was so drugged up all the time with opiates.
You know, that's true, and I've heard that often, you know, some of these diseases, women often don't have side, you know,
yeah,
show
they
effects
don't know.
Up.
Right.
So they don't
and,
know.
And even if she was having some sort of pain or whatever, she was either drunk or doped up on opiates that she probably wouldn't have noticed.
But you know what? The gonorrhea, according to one of our listeners, is more popular than our show.
So, that's true. According to one of our reviews, that's true.
So anyway, she's racked by drug abuse, gonorrhea, and alcoholism, and she puts together a new band, Full Tilt Boogie, with, you know, hoping to rekindle a past success there. Now, with this new band, she went to L.A. to record an album she'd call Pearl. Mm-hmm. Despite picking up those old habits again, her bandmates always claimed she was hardworking and sober while recording the album. She recorded Pearl with the Full Tilt Boogie band and wrote two of its songs. the powerful rocking Move Over and Mercedes-Benz. It's a gospel-style send-up of consumerism.
I love Mercedes-Benz.
They claim she would do drugs in the evening after recording sessions at a nearby place, room 105 at the Landmark Hotel. Remember that room.
Okay.
Between recording sessions, Janis would tour with Full Tilt. Her last performance will be at Harvard Stadium, August 12, 1970.
And this is, again, this is right, not too long. She went to her high school reunion was in August of 1970. So this was, you know, just after that.
August 14th.
Yeah.
So,
or right around that time.
No, you know what, Timmy? Her high school reunion was on August 15th. So this was 2 days before her.
Okay.
Her last performance.
Three days before. Yeah.
Was right before that. And she, it said she had 40,000 fans there, Timmy.
That's quite a concert.
Now, October 3rd, 1970, she was almost finished with a new album. But she visits Sunset Sound Studios in L.A. That's where the Doors recorded a lot of their stuff. To listen to the instrumental track for Buried Alive and the Blues. Prior to laying down the vocal track schedule for the next day, unfortunately, she would never get the chance to record, Timmy. That evening, she would go to Barney's Beanery on Santa Monica Boulevard, have a drink or two, then return to her room and get another heroin fix on, Timmy. She injected herself by skin popping, which works slower than injecting directly into the veins. A normal IV injection sends a drug to the brains within seconds. Popping the heroin mixture can take as long as 90 minutes to take maximum effect.
And the problem with that is you don't...
You don't know what's going to happen.
You don't know what's going to happen. I remember a friend of my brother's. I mean, back in, you know, my brothers were older than me. So in the early 70s, they had a lot of friends. You know, they had a lot of friends who were, you know, when I was like 10, 12, they were 18, 19, 20. And one of them was doing acid.
Mm-hmm.
And he had taken a couple of hits of acid, and he was waiting, and nothing happened. And he just thought he had a bad dosage or whatever. Well, he pops two more, and as soon as he pops these,
the first one kicks in.
Yeah.
I did that with muscle relaxers, Timmy. I had a problem with my shoulder. The doctor gave me these Flexerols or something like that. So I took one, and I'm thinking, this ain't doing a damn thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't feel nothing.
Right.
So I took another one, and still, mm-hmm. I don't feel nothing.
Right.
So I took the third one, and I'm sitting on my couch, and I'm like, this thing ain't doing a damn thing. I don't even know why they even give, why don't they just give me Tylenol?
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I'm going to go get me a soda out of the refrigerator, and nothing on my body would move, Timmy. I mean, I was pretty alert.
Yeah.
I was pretty, but my body would not move.
Yeah.
I could not coordinate myself.
So in this case, she did the popping that slowed the effect, basically. Delayed the effect.
So after popping, Janis took a shot and went down to the lobby to pick up a pack of Marlboros.
Like you should.
As you should, yes. Mm-hmm. That's what the Colonel used to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage anybody who's on the Marlboros now to get off of them.
They're not
any good for you.
Go with the electronic cigarette.
It'll help you out greatly. But anyway, she said hello to the night clerk, George Sandoz, asked him for change for a five. He gave her the change. She went back to her room. Now, earlier in the day, now think about this. Earlier in the day, she had already finished off a quart of tequila and taken a couple Valiums.
Oh, man.
Now, who do you know, Timmy, that can finish off a quart of tequila and take a couple Valium in a week?
Well, the only person I know that can do
is
at lunch right now.
And that's what she had for breakfast.
Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's enough to kill any man.
Yeah, that's enough to put an elephant to sleep.
Now, what happened next is based purely on speculation and investigation. It's kind of put together. But apparently, she stripped down to panties and T-shirt, waiting for the drug to kick in. And
as you would.
As you would, yeah. Mm. When I took my Flexerols, I went down to my box of briefs and sat on the couch and
just wait for something to happen.
Melted into that jello.
When I was a social worker, I worked with this guy who was really struggling with a disability, and you know, we were doing a social assessment of him. He had mental health issues, and he had 12 kids,
Damn.
And he was a single parent, 12 kids. And I said, well, you know, I was trying to get him to describe what his day was like. So I said, what do you do? And he said, well, I wake up about 9 o'clock. I said, well, then what do you do? And he said, well, I wake up and then I give me a cup of coffee and I sit on the couch and wait for something to happen.
See, that's a way to live your life, Timmy. Yeah.
Well, you know, with 12 kids, something's going to happen.
Something's going to happen. I'm just going to sit here and wait to, I'm going to see what happens here. Well, what happened? So she stripped down. She's down to a T-shirt and a panties. And when the heroin finally took effect, she was apparently caught off guard. She became unconscious. She fell to the floor, striking her head on the dresser on the way down. Nobody would find her for 18 hours. And 18 hours, she was found face down, wedged between the dresser and the bed.
Yeah, and there was some controversy. Apparently, one of her friends was supposed to come over and didn't. And had she came over, she may have found her in time.
Yeah.
But there was also reports that she told the desk clerk have no one to disturb, not let anyone to disturb her. So who knows what's the case. But, you know, apparently it wouldn't have probably mattered anyway.
No, and isn't that how, what's his name? Oh, he was married to Elizabeth Taylor. Richard
Burton?
That's how, ain't that how he died? He got drunk, sure, passed out, and hit his head and bled to death.
Oh. Yeah.
And,
yeah. I think they...
She died from the overdose.
Yeah, she died from the heroin overdose.
But I believe she may have bled to death had it not been from the overdose.
Or she certainly had a head injury based upon hitting her head.
So dry blood from the, you know, blunt force trauma was all over, stained her face, and, you know, just she was covered in it. And John Cook, the band manager, would become concerned when Janis didn't show up for a recording session the next day. And he tried to reach her by phone. Then he went to the hotel, found her lying beside the bed, the $4.50 cigarette change still in her hand. Now, coroner to the Stars, Thomas Noguchi, would report that Janis died of an acute heroin morphine intoxication.
Coroner to the Stars, isn't that who Quincy played? When his character is supposed to be based upon?
Yeah, Noguchi was a Los Angeles coroner, I guess, that did all those.
He did Bobby Kennedy, I think.
He did a ton of books. And
Marilyn Monroe, maybe.
Wrote a book. Mm-hmm. And now, although her death was ruled accidental, her demise was spelled out many years before, as that young girl in Port Arthur just couldn't find a way to me.
Yeah.
In alignment with her wishes, her body was cremated in the Pierce Brother Westwood Village Mortuary, and her ashes strewn along the Northern California coastline near Stinson Beach.
See, that's what I want you guys to do with me. I want you to take my ashes.
We'll take them any way you want, Timmy.
I went up by the bay, you know.
Now, another of her dying wishes, she requested $2,500 be set aside for her own wake, at which the Grateful Dead and other performers will provide entertainment.
Now, that's a party. I'm not leaving $2,500 for you guys to have a party. You forget
that. Yeah, I won't get the Dead, but we'll see if we can get Bruce to come on.
Okay. Or at least see if you can get someone who does Bruce's cover.
Cover band, yeah.
Apparently they're free. They're not playing the inauguration.
You know, I mean, that whole thing, what I'm thinking about is, why would you get... There are so many bands in the country that why would the hell would you want a cover band at the thing?
I don't, because if they turn you down, it looks really bad.
Yeah, well, and you know, again, we try to stay away from politics, but you have to know. There's no way you cannot know what side of the political spectrum Bruce Springsteen is on.
Right, right.
And
they make their living off of him.
They make their living off of his, basically, they make their living off of his kindness, because he could get an injunction to stop them at any time he wanted.
Sure, sure.
But he does not.
Yeah. And we're talking about the cover band that the Bruce Springsteen cover band who turned down an opportunity to play at the inauguration is what we're talking
about. Yeah, and you know, many of these, like this band, they had signed on to play the inauguration before they knew who was winning.
Right,
who was
going
to win.
Right.
And so many of these people, and you know, country music is loaded with conservative people.
Sure.
But they did not want to get in the middle of this controversy.
Right. Because it doesn't, it's not good business.
No, it's not. It's, it's, you know, and there's probably, you know, Toby Keith's big enough, you know, he played, he's big enough, he ain't going to worry about
right,
it.
Right, right.
You know, and much like Bruce played at both of Obama's.
Right.
Well, he played his inauguration, he played his last convention. But
right, if you're big enough, you don't have to worry about
it. You don't have to worry about
it. But if you're, you know, if you're, you're not established or you're, you know, you're a B, kind of B type of celebrity, you got to worry about
that.
Well,
and you got to remember that, you know, he did not do especially well with young voters who are, you know, going to support you. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot. The whole thing kind of surprised me a little bit because I thought there would be a lot more. Because, there, you know, Randy Owen from Alabama campaigned for Mitt Romney.
Right.
You know, actively campaigned for him. Meatloaf, you know.
I think if it had been a normal election and you would have someone like a
Mitt
Romney.
And I think that's what it was, is that there was so much contentiousness in this election that it wasn't necessarily Trump. Mm-hmm. It was that people didn't want to be associated with the whole event.
Yeah, they just wanted to be away from it. It's so, you know,
It's become this thing where you have to choose a side.
Yeah.
And people don't. There's a lot of people who don't want to choose sides.
Yeah. Well, as I said, it's not good business because you're gonna either way you go, you're gonna make someone mad. So you're better off just to stay out of it.
So anyway, she has this party. It's held at the Lion's Share in San Anselmo.
This is her wake.
Yeah, her wake. Invitations are given out to 200 special guests that would read "Drinks are on Pearl." Now, she died on October 4th, 1970. She was 27. She died just 2 weeks after her friend, Jimi Hendrix, and less than 1 year before the Doors' Jim Morrison would perish in a Paris
hotel. You know, dude, I heard a weird theory. Is that, you remember we talked about during the Manson murders, the Tate-LaBlanca murders, that Sharon Tate's father, I think his name was Paul, was in the army with intelligence in the army. There's this crazy theory online that he won after Manson killed his daughter.
He went after all the musicians. I've heard that.
He went after Janis, and he was involved with the death of Janis Joplin, of Jimi Hendrix, of Jim Morrison. I think it's all crazy, but, you know, it's...
You know, but she spent a lot of time in San Francisco. She may have crossed paths with Charlie.
I mean, they were there at the same time. They certainly were
traveling in the same circles.
I think at this point she was probably bigger. She was a star at that point. But, yeah, certainly Haight Ashbury. When you hear, their streets, Haight Ashbury. When you talk about Haight Ashbury, her apartment is literally at
Haight, the corner.
I mean, maybe two doors down, and it's right there. So it certainly was right in the area where Manson was, was doing his thing when he was recruiting his family.
Well, Full Tilt Boogie, they continued to finish the album as Janis had already laid down some vocal tracks. The song Buried Alive in the Blues would appear on the album as an instrumental, as Janis never recorded those vocals. And Pearl is now considered Janis Joplin's most successful commercial and artistic achievement. It spawns, that's obviously My Baby, Trust Me, Mercedes-Benz, and Me and Bobby McGee.
Yeah, it's considered one of the greatest albums of all time.
Now, she was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1995. She was well known for, obviously, her performing. Audience and critics referred to her stage presence as electric. Rolling Stone ranked Janis number 46 on its 2004 list of 100 great all-time singers. And in 2013, Washington's Arena Stage featured a production of A Night with Janis Joplin starring Mary Bridget Davies. In it, Joplin puts on a concert for the audience while telling stories of her past inspirations, including Odetta, Aretha Franklin, and others. And it went on tour.
Yeah, it played here in Cincinnati. I didn't see it, but it played here in Cincinnati.
And you know who really was her big inspiration. Mm-hmm. She loved Aretha Franklin, mm-hmm. But she called her the Empress of the Blues. And if you don't know her, look her up on YouTube, Bessie Smith.
Oh, yeah, Bessie Smith.
Now, of course, it was Billie Holiday, but you remember Tina Turner was big at this time, too.
Sure.
And she was a big influence on, because Tina Turner was very, their performing styles were very similar. You know, Tina mm-hmm. Turner was very raw sexually, you know, this very sexual thing. And Billie Holiday was a big influence on her.
We have to do a podcast on Billie Holiday at some point, too. She had an interesting life.
Now, in November, she was given the 2,510th star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. On August 18th, 2014, the U.S. Postal Service made a stamp for Janis as part of its Music Icons Forever stamp series. And in December 15th, 2015, Amy Berg released her biographical documentary film Janis, Little Girl Blue, narrated by Cat Power. It was a New York critic's pick. Janis still remains one of the top-selling musicians in the United States, with Recording Industry Association of America certifications of 15.5 million albums sold.
Wow.
It's not bad for a misfit from Port Arthur, Texas, Timmy.
No, it wasn't. She had quite a career, and when you look at it, you think, she was only 27. She only lived to be 27. Years old. Made quite a...
And that's when, you know, that's when really they musicians, most musicians to me, start to hit their...
Yeah.
Really just are beginning.
To hit their stride.
To hit their stride. They haven't even done their best work yet.
Yeah.
And she...
She had an amazing, amazing career and was, you know, that lives on now. I mean, it's, you know. That was what? That was 1907. That was damn near 50 years ago, or 40.
Well, and I think she, you
seven
know,
years ago.
There's something that she's, there's something that resonates with every, you know, and I don't mean this in a bad way, because mm-hmm. just a regular person, a popular person, but
if you're
a misfit girl, mm-hmm. you know, somehow you don't fit in or something, and every girl, you know, mm-hmm. and every girl at some point feels like they don't fit in.
Sure. And then you're dealing with weight issues and acne, and people are making fun of you.
And she is the one who, despite all that, became this kind of sex symbol.
Yeah.
You know.
Through music.
Yeah.
As we were mentioning, the 27 Club, those are people, artists who died at the age of 27. Also included Jimi Hendrix, Jim Morrison, and as we mentioned earlier, Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, so. Kurt Cobain.
Yeah. Colonel, your final thoughts on Pearl.
Janis Joplin. She was a tragic story, but she was one of those people, and I believe much like Amy Winehouse, much like Kurt Cobain, they were not meant for this world.
Yeah. And Marilyn Monroe.
Marilyn Monroe,
Are not going, they're going to have a very, you know, they have a very successful life. They do a lot of great things, but they just burn out way too quickly.
Yeah.
And tragic story, but another in a series on our suicide series, Colonel, even though it was unintentional, but still.
Yeah, still killed herself.
Yeah. Too bad. Great, great artist. Okay, Colonel, we're going to get the shout-outs.
Let's get the shout-outs. Well, of course, we got Tasha and Miss Ophelia.
Out there in California. Hey, yeah. Tasha.
Rebecca Montanley.
Hey, Rebecca.
Miss Annette Petray.
The lovely Annette Petray from the Bronx, New York.
Jeff Girdley.
Hey, Jeff.
Sam Hildebrand. Linda Middleton. Missy Dean Horton. Britt and Chris, Celine, of course, Jeff Chestnut, Teresa Slavin, Tommy Boomershine.
Tommy Boom Boom.
All of the Trowbridges.
Yes.
Every single one of the Trowbridges.
Wonderful family.
They are a wonderful family. Phyllis Munson, of course, Aaron Wentz, Donna Curran, Brian and Lisa Lawton, Olivia Meyer, when you think of, tell me, we're gonna do a free association
all
thing
right
here, Timmy.
Okay, I do that a lot with my shrink.
Beautiful Nordic blonde women.
Okay, that would be Kasia.
They're all right, Miss Kasia. How you? Because she's only Nordic one I know that we have.
Well, we have Lise, but I'm not sure she's blonde.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, fair enough.
And she's lovely.
Kate McCarthy.
Lovely
Bridget
Kate.
Clavey, of course.
Of course, Bridget.
Byron Snellings. Denny McNamara.
Yeah, Denny, I'm still working on Matthew Hoffman. I promised Denny. I promised Kasia I would do a podcast. And I promised Denny I would do a topic. So I'm still okay. working on him, guys. I haven't forgot you.
William Truax.
Hey, William.
Amber Krupp. Gina Spillane. I'm sorry, Jenny. Where am I getting that at? Trixie. Stephanie Quick. Sydney and Michael.
Your muscle relaxers are kicking in.
I know. It's getting to be late in the day. Jamie Tarantino. And yeah, you should all know that Timmy stayed in probably about an hour late at work to do this.
So oh, but it's worth
the sacrifices
for our,
you make.
For our listeners, it's well worth
but
it.
But we couldn't get the devil to do one even
four hours she's
ago.
Got, you know, she's got her Southern comfort.
Cussing at people,
yeah,
starting fights.
Yeah. Then, you know, all the stuff that Brandy does.
Yeah. But Jamie, the lovely Jamie Tarantino, and I...
Lovely Jamie?
I know Jamie's lovely because she posted a picture of a senior picture.
Oh, okay. And she's an artist.
Even if... She is. She's an amazing, incredible artist. Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, John Cunningham, Tara V, Jean... Hold on.
Okay.
Bond.
Jean Bond.
Okay. Lydia... Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover, Jeff Appel, Christine.
Bourgeois.
Katie.
Moorhead.
There we go. Mary Ray, Marvin Hammond, Annie Bolly, Cheryl Musco, Keith Frosty, Becky Mitchell, Steve Miller, Nick Starr, Natasha Davis, Neil Eagleton. Of course, Molly. We got to get Molly in there.
Of course, the lovely Molly.
The lovely also Jennifer Wick.
Oh, yeah, Jennifer. I like Jennifer.
Jennifer's very funny.
She is.
Robin Sanchez.
Yes, Robin Sanchez.
TJ Youngblood. Thomas.
Justin Bordeaux.
Justin Bordeaux. Mm-hmm. Dave Hill. John Gray. Don Gordon. Kirsten Davidson. Susan Angles. The lovely M. Waterfall. Christian Dormer, Daniel Fredrickson, Amber Anderson. Got it right that time.
You did.
Pete Fulmer. Let's see here. Jorg Huckler. Lovely Kelsey Froh. How you doing out there, Kelsey? Carlene Madsen. Tammy Ennis, of course. Valerie Murray. Kristen Andreasen. Nancy Weller. Anita Darden. Jessica Winchester. Carla from Portsmouth.
Yeah, my friend Carla from New Boston, Ohio.
Amber Trevino, Angie L., Karen Alden, Norma DiMaggio, Andy Smizer, Brandy Deese, Callie Jones. Callie Jones is a pretty girl. All these women are pretty. I don't know why I say
that.
We
have beautiful women on our page.
Skip Fayu, Susanna Sheldon, Toby, I already got. Let's see. Jennifer Miller, Marion Buchwald, Jeffrey Dolan, Stacy Lynn, Brenda Deutsch, Lynn Evans, Jessica Bishop, Jim Moyer, Michael Daniel, Amelia Roscoe, Pavlova Valentina, Maddie Kennan, Heather Marshall, Terry Hemsley, Carol Nash, Kevin Behan, Lise, of course, Mike Tabor, John Janke, Jeff Hopkins,
Maggie Ann Glover,
Joe Hopkins, of course, Andaza, Heather Hall, Heather Poole, Brittany Powell, Melissa Lebrano, Mike Arnold, Paul Mampilli, Cindy Overstreet Hamilton, Jennifer Potts, Maria Barber, Christina Montana, Christina Hodges, Steph Glenn, and did I get Nancy Jalapeno Papa in there?
Nah, but say if you're not, say it again.
Huh?
If not, say it again.
Nancy Jalapeno Papa. Kim Kazmersky Kamikaze, Jennifer Hawkins, Tara Nee Chinchilla, Lindsey O'Brien from up in the Windy City, Eddie Rushing, Sonyana, Yo Handler, Sammy James, my buddy Jason Dykes, Amy Carol Payne, lovely Tyra Jenkins. Let's see, we get into the Colonel's crew here. Angie Ball, Sarah, beautiful little Sarah, beautiful Jen Burdick, Karen Barnes. I haven't talked to Karen in a bit. I have to say hi to her. Jana Fitzgerald, lovely Irish lass, Frances Darton. Jessica Williams, who's just badass. She's just...
Absolutely.
Absolutely a badass woman.
And I'm glad she's back. We missed her for a while.
We did. Amanda Bocce Ball, Shannon, of course, lovely Tiffany, Monica DiAgostino.
What about, did you say Teresa Slavens?
Teresa Slavens, Scotty J, of course, Radhika Smith, Angela Cobes, Liz Keating, of course.
The lovely Liz Keating, who says, by the way, she's not sure how she ended up on Team Colonel.
She was, I believe it was, Monica DiAgostino put her on there.
Well, she doesn't seem to recall signing any paperwork that would,
The contract's in the mail.
Yeah, well, she doesn't and, seem to believe
And
that
our
she
newest, was. Member, although I thought when her mama left, she left, I didn't want to cause a divide in the family.
I see.
Is Jennifer, the lovely Jennifer Siemens.
Yes. Jennifer and her son, Hunter.
And her son, Hunter. We have the mascot of Team Colonel, Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
How are you? And the muscle. The brains in the muscle of the operation, Timmy. My beautiful solicitor, Nicola.
Yes, she's your counselor.
My counselor. And they come really, you can't separate these two. And they're both... really the two most dangerous women in podcasting.
Oh, absolutely.
Allie and Charlie from the Insight Podcast. Yes. Charlie puts up with what's with my ginger jokes and
mm-hmm. But Allie they're dangerous.
Doesn't kill you know, I don't know who is the more dangerous of the two.
But we're gonna see them at the
We're gonna see them but
Crime Con.
I mean Allie's the crazier of the two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
well, I don't know. I mean it's a toss up.
Well, I think Charlie might be the more evil of the two.
Yeah, well, I think Charlie knows how to hide the bodies.
And Allie just doesn't care.
Yeah.
I believe Allie would just drag you by, kill yeah. you, drag you by the yeah. collar right down the street, throw yeah. you on the beach, and just walk away.
Right.
You know, and then the police show up and Allie give them that cute accent that, not me, mate. I not know
love.
What you're talking about. Not me, love. Not, don't know, yeah. don't know boy, what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm That's just the worst Australian accent I've ever heard.
I'm just a,
not Allie, yours.
I'm just a smart, pretty bird here drinking my coffee.
Yeah, bird.
Bird, I don't know. So anyway, that's a shout out. So, except for my lovely Lady Beverly
mm-hmm.
and the beautiful Dottie Scott. Dottie, thank you for
yes, thank
all
you,
your
Mom.
Support. You were
I'm not sure if
with
you,
us in the beginning.
Yes. I'm not sure if you got Magia?
No, I'm sure, certain I did not because we did this very quickly and this
yeah.
is an old list.
Yeah, we were not expecting to record today. We just decided to do it.
So if I missed you, give me a yell yeah. On the page and
yeah.
say, hey, what the hell, Colonel?
Yeah, we had the script ready to go and we didn't think we were going to be able to record today because we all had... time restraints, but we decided we wanted to get something out to you this weekend, so I decided to stay a little later. Colonel got back from his doctor's appointment quickly, and we were able to do this one, and I'm glad we did, because I like this topic. I love Janis Joplin, and hopefully everyone enjoyed it.
Now, give me your opinion of this, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you do, and actually, Renee made me go to the doctor,
mm-hmm.
Because I got a little... weird patch of skin on my cheek.
Yeah, which I told you is nothing.
And Renee insisted. This was not something Renee insisted and said you have to go get that looked at. And now, if your doctor tells you, you know what, I could tell you with a 99% degree of certainty that that is not skin cancer.
Mm-hmm.
What do you hear, Timmy?
1% chance I've got skin cancer. Yeah,
that's what I heard was there's a chance you got skin cancer right there.
If he would say that to me, what I would hear is get your affairs in order.
That's pretty much what I'm thinking. Because he says to me, I could tell you with a 99% degree of certainty that that is not any kind of skin cancer. And I said, well, what is the 1% that's holding you back? Because what I want to hear is,
that's just a patch of
don't worry about it. It's like the Seinfeld with George Costanza had a white spot. No, it's nothing. Just go on home.
You want absolute certainty.
I want absolute. So what my brain heard was, oh yeah, you got cancer. There's a chance you have cancer.
I'm sure that's not the case, Colonel. Where can people find us?
Well, the best place to find us, if you want to have a lot of fun,
is Cincinnati.
Come to Cincinnati. We're podcasting live. We didn't care about the political ramifications. We're podcasting live from the inauguration.
No, we're not. We're not at all.
You can find us on Facebook.
Yeah, we have
History Dweebs.
Yeah, we have two pages. One is History Dweebs, where we post history-related articles. And then we have the fun page where we interact with all the people we talk about, all the folks that get shout-outs. And that is History Dweebs, the podcast group. So join us there. It's a lot of fun. The people are really cool. And there's always something going on there, something crazy going on there all the time.
Obviously, you can find us on iTunes. And what we'd really, really like, and I know that most people that listen to podcasts listen to 30 podcasts. So you can't afford to support every single podcast that you listen to on Patreon. But what you can do for free is go to iTunes and leave us a review.
Yeah, and we got a very nice review from a listener in Canada, Sister Friend 6. She says she thoroughly enjoys the podcast, and she's also a member of our group. I'm not sure who she is, but whoever you are, thank you very much.
And make yourself known in the group so we know who, so we can thank you.
We can thank you properly.
Go to iTunes, just click on our icon, leave a review.
That's how people find us. Otherwise, they won't find us, and we want to continue to grow as a podcast. And
we want to continue to serve you.
Yes.
We want to be the best us we can be for
you. And it's hard to do with Brandy,
you
know, Brandy here. But we can do it sometimes when she's away.
Sometimes when she's away
drinking,
drinking her tequila, smoking her cigarettes.
Drinking her Southern Comfort.
Playing her foosball with her friends.
Yeah. We can put together a decent podcast.
You can also find us on Stitchy. You can find us on Twitter.
Yeah.
At HistoryDweebs1. Mm-hmm. You can find me at Hawk Walters. I'm not as active as I need to be. I need to get more on that. But
follow us.
Follow us.
Yes.
I do not tweet as much as I should, but.
You don't tweet as much as our new president.
Our new president, nor do I tweet as much as Anthony Weiner.
Yeah,
I wonder if they ever took. I am going to be interested to see if, because he gets the president's account now. I wonder. It's been 4 hours. I wonder if he's put out anything on the POTUS account.
To check that out. Okay, thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Good day.
Bye everyone.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.